All right. So we're just getting started with Joseph. And he is, as I said last week, a man of great integrity and faith. Just a wonderful character. I suspect that there's not anyone in the Bible that is more Christ-like in character than Joseph. He lived a life that, you know, we've talked about when we were studying Abraham. And again, on a different level, Abraham was a great man, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, character because just of what he means to God's scheme of redemption. But, you know, you stop and as you studied, I know many of you have studied Joseph before and even just in your reading through the Bible have read the story of his life. And there's very few flaws that Joseph has. As we go through these lessons together, you'll discover that I won't be able to say as much as I did with Abraham. You know, he was just a man. And that's true with all Bible characters. And it's true with Joseph. He did have some flaws. But as we work our way through his story, they're just not nearly as obvious as even some of the character mistakes that Abraham made. His life, his story is pretty close to flawless. I mean, it really is. And he's just an impressive Bible character. And he was a sinner, we know that. But just he lived beyond reproach, above reproach. And we can all do that. Remember, Paul told Titus that that's exactly what he should do. And by inference, all of us should do. We should be living above reproach. But Joseph did that. And the most difficult circumstances, he was able to do that. And so he is just a great man. Well, last week, as we got started, see if I can get this thing to work. I don't know why it's not working. This is the good one. This should work. Let's see. Might stand up here. That do anything? Really? That's not good. I don't think it's the control. Got to have the slides, I think. We may not, though. Let's try to exit and do it. Now, why would that stay up when I exit it out? That is strange. Let's see here. Oh, songs are up here. Did I see our good elder Steve up here? There's. Huh? This thing does have a mind of its own. All right. That kind of looks like it'll do something. Computers, I realize, I don't have a clue what I'm doing, but if you push enough buttons, it starts to work. something starts going. All right. So, we talked last week about the favoritism that really plagued this family. And so we'll talk more about that as we get into the text in Genesis chapter 37. But it started way back with Isaac, if you weren't here last week. Isaac loved Esau because he ate his game, but Rebecca loved Jacob. And so this was an open kind of situation and that no doubt the children knew these things, which makes it very surprising that Jacob demonstrated the favoritism that he did to the extent that he did, because he had to be hurt by the fact that Isaac loved Esau. There's no doubt Rachel loved him, but you know what every young man wants is the respect of his father. And so the fact that it was out there that Isaac loved Esau had to sting a little bit. And you would think that he would learn something from that and vow, I'm not going to do that to any of my sons. But That's exactly what he ended up doing. In a way that was more obvious than Isaac, actually. So we'll see that as we go forward. But we're looking at the family that Joseph was born into. And you see it up there. But more particularly, the sons were just not good men. And it's surprising to say that, because when you think of these men, they, of course, you think of the 12 tribes of Israel, and they came from these men. And but still, as we went through last week, we just briefly, I think we closed looking at this, where Simeon and Levi were mass murderers. Just read Genesis chapter 34 if you think that's too tough. Like, they murdered a whole city of men. Do you remember the situation? Had them circumcised and then went in and slaughtered them when they couldn't move because they'd been circumcised. And then looted the place and took their women and children. And I don't care how you look at that. That says something about them. Like, not just anyone can go into a city and kill all the men in the city. Murder them. Because that's what it was. And I know they had the reason with Dinah, of course, she was raped, but all that, and it's terrible, but nevertheless, what they did wasn't justified. And by the way, when you think about Jacob, I have to be careful because, you know, these are Bible characters, and Jacob was a patriarch, and he himself was a man of faith, but of the patriarchs, he really had more flaws than the others. But especially as a father, because he not only showed favoritism, but he was a very passive father in very important ways. Like, do you remember the story? What did he do when he heard of what Simeon and Levi did? Remember what he did? Remember what Jacob did? Of course you don't, because he didn't do anything. He said something to him. I mean, he was a little bit afraid. Now, you know, I'm vulnerable because of what you have done. And he realized that put him in a dangerous position. Of course, God took care of him. That didn't come to anything. But that was his only response. What are the inhabitants around here going to do when they find out what you have done? Because he knew it was a terrible thing that they had done. But that was it. That was it. And even when his daughter was raped, remember what the record said? What did he do about that? You don't remember, do you? Because he didn't do anything. It just says he heard it, and Jacob heard it. And that's it. And that was kind of his M.O. That's what he would do. He basically, as a father, was inactive, was very passive. And you know this household of his is a mess. And there's hostility there, and there's jealousy there, and these boys of his are just wicked, and yet he doesn't ever do anything. He seems clueless, really. Even with this favoritism, it seems like he doesn't have a clue. And so I don't want to come down too hard on Jacob, but I kind of did, didn't I? But that's Jacob. That's who he was. If we're going to be honest about it, Reuben was an incestuous man. Just read Genesis 35. You remember who he had an illicit affair with, or at least the act. Who was that with? Anybody remember? Right. So now let me ask you this. What was the difference between Reuben and the fornicator of 1 Corinthians 5? Not a whit of difference. These are the kind of brothers that Joseph had. Judah was an immoral man, impregnated his daughter-in-law. And in fact, if you have the old King James, he would be called a whoremonger. Like, he regularly went after prostitutes, and that's how he ended up, didn't realize that he was having relations with his daughter-in-law. What a mess. What a mess. His sons, Bilhah and Zilpah, received a bad report. We'll talk about that in a minute. But one thing we know without even looking at that, the report came from Joseph. Was Joseph a liar? No. Whatever you think about that report, it was true. These were not good men. And so there you have it. And it's really a troubling household. It had to be filled with hostility that you could probably sense, and just a mess. And that again is what Joseph was born into. Well, let's begin then looking at Joseph. He comes on the scene. Turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter 37. And when he comes on the scene, of course, he's just a young man, 17 years old, is all he is. So we see much of his life as we go through this story. It takes us through the end of the book of Genesis. And so in chapter 37, we see at verse 1, Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pastoring the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. And so as we begin looking at this, the very beginning of his story, at least, you know, from the biblical standpoint, the biblical record, was Joseph's bad report necessary? It's amazing what I read from commentaries and various scholars. The large majority of them believe, and let me just say before I go on, that this is, whenever you're looking at these Bible characters, we'll give a lot of book, chapter, and verse, just like we did with Abraham as we go along. But there are some things that, you know, you just have to kind of come to your own conclusion about. There are opinions involved in some of these things. And the opinion of a lot of commentaries is that Joseph at this young age, just 17, that he was demonstrating his youth, that he basically had become a tattletale. And that it was a sign of his, you know, growing up being spoiled and that, you know, that sort of thing. And so there even certain preachers have sermons on Joseph and him tattling on his brothers. And you know, what should we do in this? How should we keep our tongue and things like that? But I don't believe that's the case in this situation at all. And you have studied it before, and maybe that's your conclusion, and that's okay. But I think we don't have a whole lot of information about this bad report, really. Number one, the word bad here, the Hebrew word, the simple Hebrew word, just ra is what it is. And it means, the King James, I think, has evil instead of bad. And a few other translations have that as well. The New King James has bad as well, I think. But it really means wicked. Like in all of its uses, it sometimes it's used in a way that means a little less than that, but by far the majority of times where that word ra appears, it's denoting real wickedness. So we find that these men were doing, his brothers were doing something evil, something wicked. Should Joseph have just ignored that? And I tell you something else we don't know. It sounds to me like just even the way it reads here that he gave a report that Joseph brought a bad report of them. A lot of times when you're thinking about giving a report, it is something that's expected. Like we support preachers here. A lot of I've never talked with the elders about this, so I don't know, but a lot of elderships will demand that preachers they support give them a report. And at the very least, it's expected. I know all preachers realize who are being supported. They know it's expected. Like, you know, it's a good thing, good practice. And a lot of elders require it. They want to know, you know, how much money's coming in and that sort of thing. You know, what you're doing and everything. That's good stewardship. And so preachers give a report every month. Well, it's not altogether their idea, though they don't mind doing it, the preachers that I know, but they're it's expected. And I'm just saying in all of that, that it could very well be that Jacob put Joseph up to this. And he was just coming back and giving a report. Jacob expected it. So what was Joseph, if that was the case, what was he to do? Was he to water it down? To lie about it? Just be silent about it? No, one of the things, I think, in this context, what we see at the, even at the age of 17, Joseph is a man of righteousness. He is a man of integrity. He is not going to turn a blind eye to sin, even if it's with his brother, even if it's going to get him in trouble and hurt their relationship. He gave a report that he should have given to Jacob. And Greg, I'll get you, but look at, we all know this passage, don't we? Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead, what? Expose them. Like a lot of commentaries act like this was something like, you know, Joseph went back and told Jacob, you know, those brothers, those sons, they're calling me names. It was a lot. It appears by the Hebrew word there for bad that this, they were doing something evil. And he reported it. He should have reported it, in my estimation. Go ahead, Greg. Right. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right that no matter how it all developed, and that could be, maybe it wasn't something Jacob did ahead of time, but it was his flock. And so there was a responsibility involved in that. And so go ahead, Rick. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yes. And so the only difference is the next time, he's not doing any pastoring. We'll talk about that in just a minute, too. But you're right. You're right. So, you know, it could have very well been something like that. And listen, it doesn't matter who it is. You're going to, you ought to. Listen, there's a lesson here for all of us. I mean, we not only not have a part in it. Like whatever they were doing, Joseph wouldn't participate. But then he exposed it. Isn't that exactly what Paul says here? Shouldn't we do the same thing? Would you have done that? Would you, if you were Joseph, would you have revealed it? We had a conversation. I hope you take this the right way. So right away, me saying that, I made two women in here nervous, my wife and Kara. But I had a conversation with Jordan here. I mean, it was a long time, but we had a conversation. In fact, it was Jordan and Shantae. You know, children are a trip. They're minds. But they wanted, I think they were testing our loyalty. And so Jordan came up and he said, hey, what if I, and I can't be honest with you, I can't remember what it was, but it was something real bad. What if I like robbed a bank or something? And would you turn me in? And you know, he wanted, you know, family comes first and everything. And so now Jordan would never, ever rob a bank. This is just, he just wanted, they were just testing up. You know, what would you do? What would you do? What would you do? If your only son did something real bad and the authorities were after them, would you turn him in? Yes. Can't remember what I said, but something to the effect, you better get used to wearing orange because I'm not keeping that. I'm not going to jail for you. No, you do the right thing, don't you? Even if it's family. Even if it's going to strain relationships. You do the right thing. And I'm not quite sure why, but you just break out some commentaries. Almost all of them. Joseph was, he grew out of this rather quickly, but he was a tattletale. Really? You know, maybe so. You know, maybe it was little nothing, but I don't think so. I'm more with Greg. I think he was doing the right thing. And to me, at 17, it showed not immaturity, but maturity and integrity. a person who was going to do right. And we see that as he goes forward. We see that in his life. And I tell you something, really, when you stop and think about it, by the time you're 17, you're not grown, and you have some maturing to do, of course, at 17. But your overall makeup is pretty much, your personality and things are pretty much there by the time you're 17, right? You might do some changing and growing in different areas, but like if you're a 25-year-old who is serious and sober-minded, you know what you probably were at 17? Sober and serious, serious and sober-minded, probably. And so, yeah. Right. And that's true with all of us. Yeah, that's true. That's exactly right. So I think this is a good trait in Joseph as we begin. But let's go further here in the rest of this. You notice at verse 3, now, we see right away, then we see the favoritism showing itself. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons, because he was the son of his old age. And so this was something, there's a couple of things here. I have a little note here just quickly on this idea of the son of his old age. I take that for just exactly what it says. There are some, because the Hebrew is a little bit vague evidently at this place, the pulpit commentary says literally a son of old age was he to him. And if that is the literal translation of that, it would mean simply that he was a son possessing wisdom. And there's some translations that kind of word it like that. They're not real popular translations, but there's a few scholars that believe, like the pulpit commentary. That's a pretty faithful, reliable commentary set, really denominational, but it's pretty reliable. But it takes the position that basically this means that he loved Joseph because even at the age of 17, he had a lot of wisdom and knew how to carry himself. And so I personally think that the weight of it is exactly what it says, that he loved him because in his old age, he's like 91 by the time that that Joseph is born, and that it really means what most of the translations say. But there's something more important to me than that. It's connected with the fact that he's the son of his old age, but it's not so much that as when, but by whom. And that is, of course, Joseph is the son of Rachel. And you remember what the record says, you know, you think about favoritism again. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah and served Laban for another 7 years. It seems to me that that was, not only did he have Joseph in an old age, but it was finally, after years of trying, I think it was like 20 years, finally, Rachel was able to bear a son. And that endeared Jacob to him. He loved Rachel more than Leah. And guess what? That would be hard to hide. He certainly wouldn't be able to hide that from Leah. And it's clear when they're having all these children that she was very much aware of that. But it would also be hard to hide from the sons as they grew up. And so you think more jealousy and sibyl rivalry going on would be involved in that. Because everybody would know that he loved Rachel the most, loved her more than Leah, and then that love would be transferred to Joseph, Rachel's son, and that's made clear. So you just stop and think about that for you. This wasn't something that happened just here in Genesis chapter 37. Like this would be no doubt he received favored treatment many years in the making. And these sons, his other sons, would see that. And the thing about Jacob is he was so clueless, he never tried to hide it. And that could be very divisive in a family. So, yes.
As you look at this whole picture, it all started with Laban. If Laban would have been honest.
Right.
Leah wouldn't even have been a part of it.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And so, you know, it starts all the way back.
Yes.
And of course, Jacob was wrong in showing favoritism. He took her for a wife. He didn't absolutely have to take her
right.
as a wife.
That's right.
So he made a mistake there. But he loved Rachel and he wanted her, so he sacrificed and took Leah.
Yes, this is more understandable.
He started the whole thing by
right.
deceiving Jacob.
Right. This is more understandable, isn't it? Like from all appearances from the scripture record, I don't know how you feel about this, but it appears as if that was love at first sight. Like he loved Rachel immediately. And so this isn't so much his fault. He was tricked into having to marry Leah. And that was all Laban's doing. Now, but that's as far as you can go with that. Transferring that to the sons is a whole different thing. And then not at all trying to hide it. So these other sons who are, you know, they don't have the best character themselves, and they're no doubt mean, they're wicked, for sure we know that. And so them growing up sensing that, their attitude towards Joseph is predictable. And then on top of that, letting that be known, then at verse 3 it says, it goes on to say, verse 4 rather, or the end of verse 3, it says, and he made him a robe of many colors. Now we're all familiar with that, but now you have a tangible sign. Like these other brothers, no doubt they knew growing up, they knew, oh yeah, he favors Joseph. Oh yeah. And they probably not, but now they have a tangible sign. And this sign is more than what you might think it is. It is, this robe is a robe of distinction in a couple of different ways. And really, it's the robe is a tunic, but it's the kind of tunic that the Hebrew word for many colors, that's not a great translation. And we've kind of run with that. So whenever you think of the story of Joseph and you see pictures of it, what do you see? Usually a striped robe with many different colors. Well, the Hebrew word for many colors really means long and sleeved. And so it was a particular kind of tunic that not everybody wore, that went all the way, the sleeves went all the way to the wrist and the robe dropped all the way down to the ankles. It was a robe that was worn by priests and the things that they would do. Exodus 24, verse 4 says, these are the garments that they shall make, a breastplate, an ephod, a robe, and a coat of checkered work. And it's the word coat there that actually is the same word translated many colors or translated robe in the other passage. And so, kathunith is the Hebrew word. But it meant a robe, a long flowing robe that reached the wrist and the ankles. It was the kind of attire that royalty would wear. Now this passage, this is dealing with a woman, of course, and so it wouldn't be exactly the same, but it would be the same kind of attire. She was wearing a long robe with sleeves. And that's the kind of robe that Jacob gave Joseph. And so the point of it is, and then the Hebrew scholars are all over the place with it. Some say the Hebrew word emphasizes that it had a lot of ornaments on it. And it could have been all of the above. It could have been colorful and it could have had ornament. The thing about it is, though, it was a distinctive attire that set you apart. And it wasn't something you worked in. Like, you weren't going out in the field to pastor in that robe. It was something you wore to special occasions. It was something that set you apart. And one of the things you notice in our text, go back to Genesis 37 and the passage that Rick referred to earlier. But notice this. He, as it opens up, we find Joseph at work, don't we? He's out there and he's pasturing the flock. But at verse 12 it says, and his brothers went to pasture their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. So he goes out to them, but what is he not doing? Right, he's not working. He's not working because giving him this particular kind of attire was setting a signal that he's going to become a chieftain. He's going to become the leader of the clan. Jacob was fully planning for Joseph to take over when he died. And this coat signified that. It would have been a clear sign to them immediately that the privilege of firstborn was going to Joseph. It wasn't going to Reuben. Why not? Huh? Right. You think Jacob is going to pass the privilege of firstborn to the man who slept with his wife? Handmaid as it is. No way. It wasn't going to Simeon and Levi. Why not? They were murderers. They weren't getting it. Wasn't going to Judah. He was immoral. Jacob fully planned for Joseph to take over. And when he gave him that coat, all the other sons knew it. Is it any wonder that they hated Joseph? Whose fault was that? That's Jacob. He's not thinking this thing through. Like, it's one thing if you have a favorite, okay, you shouldn't, but if you do, but you don't, I mean, he certainly knows the nature of all his other sons. And he knows that this isn't good, and he's just flaunting this. This is my favorite son, and I'm going to give him this coat. He's a distinction. He's not going to be out there pastoring with you anymore. He's going to be more of a overseer in all of this. And then he sends him out to him. Like, how smart was that for a father? He's going to send him out to these men. Unless, again, he's just clueless and doesn't realize that his sons have this animosity towards his favorite son. That's possible, but that would even make him more clueless, wouldn't it? But that's what he does here. And so, again, we're not surprised here when it tells us that they hated Joseph. And notice the extent of it. They hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. That's how much they hated him. They couldn't even acknowledge him. They couldn't even say shalom. they couldn't. They hated him so much, they wouldn't even greet him. You think Joseph felt that? What do younger sons always want? Usually. They want to hang out with their big brothers, don't they? They want a relationship. And particularly as he was young. By the time now he's 17, he might see the writing on the wall. But they can't even speak nicely to him. And so it's a terrible situation. Just again, what a family. Now, but then, to make it worse, he has some dreams. Now, if you want to say that Joseph had a flaw, then this would be the place to do it. How he dealt with this situation, with the dreams that he had. But I don't even think, even here, the flaw is what you might think it is. Most commentaries think that it is a great demonstration of pride, and he kind of grew out of that. And maybe. I don't know that was the case. And again, you know, you can have your own opinion on that and view Joseph like, you know, as you would. But if he was full of pride, I'll tell you one thing. This was the last time he ever demonstrated it. And he never demonstrated an ounce of pride from this time forward. And maybe that was the case. Maybe somehow he immediately changed because of the situation or whatever. But I don't know that that was the flaw. I think his biggest flaw here was just bad judgment. Like this dream or these dreams really didn't have to be told. But he's a 17-year-old. And he receives a dream from God. Would you want to share that with your brothers who won't speak to you? You know, could a 17-year-old think, you know, if I tell them this dream that I had, that God spoke to me, they might talk to me. You know, that's possible, isn't it? It doesn't have to be that he's just overwhelmed with pride and he's really trying to get them because they're so hostile to him. You know, that could be the case. We just don't know. But I wouldn't put the worst twist on it, especially when we know the overall integrity of Joseph. But he has these dreams, and he does indeed share it with them. And there's a couple of different things that we could talk about with regard to these dreams and how it unfolds. But that's the second bell. So we'll look at those dreams. We'll just read it. There's not much to them, really. It's all self-explanatory. But there's a few good points to bring out about the dreams themselves. So we'll look at that next week.